He found his friend sitting in a porch on the side of the house looking east. Shadows had fallen in the valley below, but there was still a light on the faces of the mountains far above. The air was warm. The sound of running and falling water was loud, and the evening was filled with a faint scent of trees and flowers, as if summer still lingered in Elrond's gardens.
"Hooray!" cried Pippin, springing up. "Here is our noble cousin! Make way for Frodo, Lord of the Ring!"
"Hush!" said Gandalf from the shadows at the back of the porch. "Evil things do not come into this valley, but all the same we should not name them. The Lord of the Ring is not Frodo, but the master of the dark tower of Mordor, whose power is again stretching out over the world. We are sitting in a fortress. Outside it is getting dark."
"Gandalf has been saying many cheerful things like that," said Pippin. "He thinks I need keeping in order. But it seems impossible, somehow, to feel gloomy or depressed in this place. I feel I could sing, if I knew of the right song for the occasion."
"I feel like singing myself," laughed Frodo, "though at the moment I feel more like eating and drinking."
"That will soon be cured," said Pippin. "You've shown your usual cunning in getting up just in time for a meal."
"More than a meal, a feast," said Merry. "As soon as Gandalf reported that you were recovered, the preparations began."
He'd hardly finished speaking when they were summoned to the hall by the ringing of many bells. The hall of Elrond's house was filled with folk, elves for the most part, though there were a few guests of other sorts. Elrond, as was his custom, sat in a great chair at the end of the long table upon the dais, and next to him, on the one side, sat Glorfindel, on the other side sat Gandalf. Frodo looked at them in wonder, for he had never before seen Elrond, of whom so many tales spoke, and as they sat upon his right hand and his left, Glorfindel, and even Gandalf, whom he thought he knew so well, were revealed as lords of dignity and power. Gandalf was shorter in stature than the other two, but his long white hair, his sweeping silver beard, and his broad shoulders made him look like some wise king of ancient legend. In his aged face, under great snowy brows, his dark eyes were set like coals that could leap suddenly into fire. Glorfindel was tall and straight. His hair was of shining gold, his face fair and young and fearless and full of joy. His eyes were bright and keen, and his voice like music. On his brow sat wisdom, and in his hand was strength. The face of Elrond was ageless, neither old nor young, though in it was written the memory of many things both glad and sorrowful. His hair was dark as the shadows of twilight, and upon it was set a circlet of silver. His eyes were grey as a clear evening, and in them was a light like the light of stars. Venerable he seemed, as a king crowned with many winters, and yet hale as a tried warrior in the fullness of his strength. He was the Lord of Rivendell, and mighty among both elves and men. In the middle of the table, against the woven cloths upon the wall, there was a chair under a canopy, and there sat a lady fair to look upon, and so like was she in form of womanhood to Elrond that Frodo guessed that she was one of his close kindred. Young she was, and yet not so. The braids of her dark hair were touched by no frost. Her white arms and clear face were flawless and smooth, and the light of stars was in her bright eyes, grey as a cloudless night. Yet queenly she looked, and thought and knowledge were in her glance, as of one who has known many things that the years bring. Above her brow her head was covered with a cap of silver lace netted with small gems, glittering white, but her soft grey raiment had no ornament save a girdle of leaves wrought in silver. So it was that Frodo saw her whom few mortals had yet seen, Arwen, daughter of Elrond, in whom it was said that the likeness of Lúthien had come on earth again. And she was called Undomiel, for she was the even star of her people. Long she had been in the land of her mother's kin, in Lórien, beyond the mountains, and was but lately returned to Rivendell to her father's house. But her brothers, Eladan and Elrohir, were out upon errantry,
for they rode often far afield with the rangers of the north, forgetting never their mother's torment in the dens of the orcs. Such loveliness in living thing Frodo had never seen before nor imagined in his mind, and he was both surprised and abashed to find that he had a seat at Elrond's table among all these folk so high and fair. Though he had a suitable chair, and was raised upon several cushions, he felt very small and rather out of place, but that feeling quickly passed. The feast was merry, and the food all that his hunger could desire. It was some time before he looked about him again, or even turned to his neighbours. He looked first for his friends. Sam had begged to be allowed to wait on his master, but had been told that for this time he was a guest of honour. Frodo could see him now, sitting with Pippin and Merry at the upper end of one of the side tables close to the dais. He could see no sign of Strider. Next to Frodo, on his right, sat a dwarf of important appearance, richly dressed. His beard, very long and forked, was white, nearly as white as the snow-white cloth of his garments. He wore a silver belt, and round his neck hung a chain of silver and diamonds. Frodo stopped eating to look at him.
"Welcome and well met," said the dwarf, turning towards him. Then he actually rose from his seat and bowed. "Gloin at your service," he said, and bowed still lower.
"Frodo Baggins at your service and your family's," said Frodo correctly, rising in surprise and scattering his cushions. "Am I right in guessing that you are the Gloin, one of the 12 companions of the great Thorin Oakenshield?"
"Quite right," answered the dwarf, gathering up the cushions and courteously assisting Frodo back into his seat. "And I do not ask, for I have already been told that you are the kinsman and adopted heir of our friend Bilbo the Renowned. Allow me to congratulate you on your recovery."
"Thank you very much," said Frodo.
"You have had some very strange adventures, I hear," said Gloin. "I wonder greatly what brings four hobbits on so long a journey. Nothing like it has happened since Bilbo came with us. But perhaps I should not inquire too closely, since Elrond and Gandalf do not seem disposed to talk of this."
"I think we will not speak of it, at least not yet," said Frodo politely. He guessed that even in Elrond's house the matter of the ring was not one for casual talk, and in any case he wished to forget his troubles for a time. "But I am equally curious," he added, "to learn what brings so important a dwarf so far from the Lonely Mountain." Gloin looked at him.
"If you have not heard, I think we will not speak yet of that either. Master Elrond will summon us ere long, I believe, and then we shall all hear many things, but there is much else that may be told."
Throughout the rest of the meal they talked together, but Frodo listened more than he spoke, for the news of the Shire, apart from the ring, seemed small and far away and unimportant, while Gloin had much to tell of events in the northern regions of Wilderland. Frodo learned that Grimbjorn the Old, son of Bjorn, was now the lord of many sturdy men, and to their land between the mountains and Mirkwood neither orc nor wolf dared to go.
"Indeed," said Gloin, "if it were not for the Bjornings, the passage from Dale to Rivendell would long ago have become impossible. They are valiant men and keep open the high pass on the ford of Kerrook, but their tolls are high," he added with a shake of his head, "and like Bjorn of old, they are not overfond of dwarves. Still, they are trusty, and that is much in these days. Nowhere are there any men so friendly to us as the men of Dale. They are good folk, the Bardings. The grandson of Bard, the bowman, rules them. Bran, son of Bane, son of Bard. He is a strong king, and his realm now reaches far south and east of Esgaroth."
"And what of your own people?" asked Frodo.
"There is much to tell, good and bad," said Gloin. "Yet it is mostly good. We have so far been fortunate, though we do not escape the shadow of these times. If you really wish to hear of us, I will tell you tidings gladly. But stop me when you're weary. Dwarves' tongues run on when speaking of their handiwork, they say."
And with that Gloin embarked on a long account of the doings of the dwarf kingdom. He was delighted to have found so polite a listener, for Frodo showed no signs of weariness and made no attempt to change the subject, though actually he soon got rather lost among the strange names of people and places that he had never heard of before. He was interested, however, to hear that Dain was still king under the mountain and was now old, having passed his 250th year, venerable and fabulously rich. Of the 10 companions who had survived the Battle of Five Armies, 7 were still with him: Dwalin, Gloin, Dori, Nori, Bifur, Bofur, and Bomber. Bomber was now so fat that he could not move himself from his couch to his chair at table, and it took 6 young dwarves to lift him. "And what has become of Balin and Ori and Oin?" asked Frodo. A shadow passed over Gloin's face.
"We do not know," he answered. "It is largely on account of Balin that I have come to ask the advice of those that dwell in Rivendell. But tonight let us speak of merrier things."
Gloin began then to talk of the works of his people, telling Frodo about their great labours in Dale and under the mountain.
"We have done well," he said, "but in metalwork we cannot rival our fathers, many of whose secrets are lost. We make good armour and keen swords, but we cannot again make mail or blade to match those that were made before the dragon came. Only in mining and building have we surpassed the old days. You should see the waterways of Dale, Frodo, and the fountains and the pools. You should see the stone-paved roads of many colours, and the halls and cavernous streets under the earth, with arches carved like trees, and the terraces and towers upon the mountain sides. Then you would see that we have not been idle."
"I will come and see them if I can," said Frodo. How surprised Bilbo would have been to see all the changes in the desolation of Smaug! Gloin looked at Frodo and smiled.
"You were very fond of Bilbo, were you not?" he asked.
"Yes," answered Frodo. "I'd rather see him than all the towers and palaces in the world." At length the feast came to an end. Elrond and Arwen rose and went down the hall, and the company followed them in due order. The doors were thrown open, and they went across a wide passage and through other doors, and came into a further hall. In it were no tables, but a bright fire was burning in a great hearth between the carven pillars upon either side. Frodo found himself walking with Gandalf.
"This is the Hall of Fire," said the wizard. "Here you will hear many songs and tales, if you can keep awake. But except on high days, it usually stands empty and quiet, and people come here who wish for peace and thought. There's always a fire here, all the year round, but there's little other light."
As Elrond entered and went towards the seat prepared for him, elvish minstrels began to make sweet music. Slowly the hall filled, and Frodo looked with delight upon the many fair faces that were gathered together. The golden firelight played upon them and shimmered in their hair. Suddenly he noticed, not far from the further end of the fire, a small dark figure seated on a stool with his back propped against a pillar. Beside him on the ground was a drinking cup and some bread. Frodo wondered whether he was ill, if people were ever ill in Rivendell, and had been unable to come to the feast. His head seemed sunk in sleep on his breast, and a fold of his dark cloak was drawn over his face. Elrond went forward and stood beside the silent figure.
"Awake, little master," he said with a smile. Then, turning to Frodo, he beckoned to him. "Now at last the hour has come that you have wished for, Frodo," he said. "Here's a friend that you have long missed."
The dark figure raised its head and uncovered its face.
"Bilbo!" cried Frodo with sudden recognition, and he sprang forward.
"Hello, Frodo, my lad," said Bilbo.
"So you've got here at last. I hoped you'd manage it. Well, well, so all this feasting is in your honour, I hear. I hope you enjoyed it."
"Why weren't you there?" cried Frodo. "And why haven't I been allowed to see you before?"
"Because you were asleep. I've seen a good deal of you.
I've sat by your side with Sam each day, but as for the feast, I don't go in for such things much now, and I had something else to do.
What were you doing?
Why, sitting and thinking. I do a lot of that nowadays, and this is the best place to do it in as a rule. Wake up, indeed, he said, cocking an eye at Elrond. There was a bright twinkle in it, and no sign of sleepiness that Frodo could see. Wake up. I was not asleep, Master Elrond. If you want to know, you've all come out from your feast too soon, and you've disturbed me in the middle of making up a song. I was stuck over a line or two and was thinking about them, but now I don't suppose I shall ever get them right. There'll be such a deal of singing that the ideas will be driven clean out of my head. I shall have to get my friend the Dúnadan to help me. Where is he?
Elrond laughed.
He shall be found, he said. Then you two shall go into a corner and finish your task, and we will hear it and judge it before we end our merrymakings.
Messengers were sent to find Bilbo's friend, though none knew where he was or why he hadn't been present at the feast. In the meanwhile, Frodo and Bilbo sat side by side, and Sam came quickly and placed himself near them. They talked together in soft voices, oblivious of the mirth and music in the hall about them. Bilbo had not much to say of himself. When he'd left Hobbiton, he'd wandered off aimlessly, along the road or in the country on either side, but somehow he had steered all the time towards Rivendell.
"I got here without much adventure," he said, "and after rest I went on with the dwarves to Dale, my last journey. I shan't travel again. Old Balin had gone away. Then I came back here, and here I've been. I've done this and that. I've written some more of my book. And, of course, I make up a few songs. I sing them occasionally, just to please me, I think. For, of course, they aren't really good enough for Rivendell. And I listen and I think. Time doesn't seem to pass here. It just is a remarkable place altogether. I hear all kinds of news from over the mountains and out of the south, but hardly anything from the Shire. I heard about the ring, of course. Gandalf has not been here often. Not that he's told me a great deal. He's become closer than ever these last few years. The Dúnadan has told me more. Fancy that ring of mine causing such a disturbance. It's a pity that Gandalf didn't find out more sooner. I could have brought the thing here myself long ago without so much trouble. I thought several times of going back to Hobbiton for it. But I'm getting old, and they would not let me. Gandalf and Elrond, I mean. They seemed to think that the enemy was looking high and low for me, and would make mincemeat of me if he caught me tottering about in the wild.